This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Kansas City is such a small town. We're sitting in here and my next guest, we already have a very close friend in common. And Kansas City is just amazing that way. We're all just how many degrees away from each other at all times here. One of the things I love about this space. Anyway, welcome on in to Dana and Park. Scott will be back tomorrow, but I am super excited today to have Britt Frank on the program. You are a Duke person, Britt. You are a KU person. You are an author, a speaker, author of a book, Align Your Mind. And as soon as I saw that title, I thought, oh, I've got to have her on the program. You call this Driver's Ed for the Brain. We're going to get into that, but welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Why are we all so tired all the time?
Well, the world is a little bit of a chaotic mess right now, but I think we're missing some key information. There's a reason 40 million of us are diagnosed with anxiety disorders, yep. Or maybe we're missing a few things. Just like driver's ed, you can't drive a car, or at least I can't, without a few pieces of info, and our minds and our brains are the same.
And we're all chasing, we talked about this off the air, we're all chasing, why can't I sleep? Well, maybe it's melatonin. Maybe I need Pilates. We're all chasing some answer that is elusive for most of us. And why is that answer so hard to find?
And I say this as a therapist. This is a hot take, but I stand by it. The why question is keeping us all stuck. Why can't I? Why didn't they? Why did they?
Right.
Instead of why, it's what are my choices? What am I willing to do right now in service of my goal? The why question is a fun one. Call me, come into my office, we'll figure it out. But why doesn't move the needle? What, who, and how does?
How did you come to this space? Because you are around 45 years old. You are a little bit younger than I am. You have been practicing for 10 years. And then this just takes off. You also are involved in the circus. We're going to come back to that, and that's not a euphemism or a joke. You actually are. What brought you to the mental health space to help other people?
So I didn't get into it to help people. I'm not that nice.
Yeah.
I got into the work like many do because I was a hot train wreck mess of a human. And I worked in the corporate world. And then in finding my own therapist and doing this work, I was just obnoxious. Everyone needs to know this. And so I just changed careers in my early 30s and started doing this full time.
And it's worked out very well for you.
It's worked out pretty well. Yeah.
So how do you help people? Like you say, align your mind. And I was telling you off the air, you know, I tried listening to the Calm app. No, if you've got a squirrel in the brain, the way a lot of people do, certainly most creative types do, that can lead you down the alcohol road. It can lead you down the drug road. It can lead you down the chasing your tail to medicate, to try to figure out why I can't relax road. All of those things you can help with.
Yeah. And the thing is we all assume that there's this evil empire inside our head or this like meth squirrel that's trying to destroy us.
Yes.
Right. But what if we started with the assumption that your brain's on your side? Everything that's happening in your head is on your team. It actually wants you to do well. We just don't know how to speak to it. Imagine having a toddler that you don't feed, you don't hug, you don't give snacks to, you don't give toys to. And then you wonder, why is this child screaming? Think of the inner voices much more like tantruming toddlers than this enemy that's trying to attack you. Life's going to start working a lot better, yeah, a lot faster.
Do you believe that many people have generalized anxiety disorder? I have been diagnosed and I've been very open with it on the program. Like I am telling you, I think I was wired from a very young age to be a worrier. I know that. My mother, oh my gosh, we grew up with missing children on milk cartons. I've told this story before on the program many times that my grandmother used to say, oh, I saw you lined your stuffed animals up, Dana. That's so great. In case there's a fire, that's a quick way to get them all out. And I remember, like, I was five, and it's a funny story now. Look about, like, we didn't know anyone that had been in a fire. Our house had never caught on fire. But I do feel like from a very young age, I had some anxiety seeds planted. But that doesn't mean you can't overcome it, although I'm 50 years old and I still have not been able to overcome it.
So I don't doubt that people are suffering. I don't doubt that people are anxious. I am one of them. However, anxiety is not a disorder. And this is so important. Anxiety is the check engine light of your brain. If my car's engine light comes on, I'm not going to get diagnosed with check engine light disorder. But if you have anxiety, it's, oh, you have it. Therefore, this is your disorder. Anxiety is your brain trying to keep you from being eaten by lions.
Right.
Does it malfunction? Of course. Is it a disorder? Absolutely not.
But you do believe that some of us are wired to run from lions because we just think we're being chased by lions, whereas we all have people in our lives that are the calm, like no matter what, they're not too high, they're not too low. And I look at them and I think, do you not ever get worried you're going to be kidnapped in a parking lot? And we know those people. So I know the brain can be calm.
I think of those people like they're automatic cars and somehow things just work.
They just work.
I have a stick shift brain and so do you. Anyone who's high strung, the problem isn't that we're disordered. The problem is driving a stick is a lot different than driving an automatic. And
right.
I've tried. I've ruined a lot of cars that way. And so you need to know how to shift. It's not be calm, be happy. It's do you know how to shift from fifth gear to third gear in your brain? And that's what my work does.
So the answer is no. I have no idea how to do that. And so I go back to the list of things that people do. When you are on that meth squirrel treadmill, you take hot baths, you try melatonin, you try a glass of wine or two or four, whatever your vice is to get everything to calm down. You listen to Bob Ross. Like the educated part of our brains, I know what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
It still doesn't work.
Well, that's because the myth is that we're supposed to calm down when really we need volume up. What is actually going on? If you're up at 3 a.m. with a scroll in your head,
yeah.
Start asking yourself, okay, who in there wants my attention? Someone in here is wanting me up. What's going on? We're really good at yelling at ourselves. We're not so good at dialoguing. Like we think thoughts every day. If you have a conversation with yourself and you listen, you'll actually find out what's going on, which is kind of scary, but it works.
When you say you were a hot mess, how hot? How mess?
The crystal meth in a dirty bathroom at 5 a.m. before a work day kind of mess. It was bad.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You are brutally, fabulously honest. I love that.
Well, what other options are there?
Yeah. So how did you get to the other side of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as functionality goes, meth kept me away from my thoughts for a really long time. However, meth really very quickly comes to fix it or die. And for whatever reason, I did not want to unalive myself. I actually did want to live.
Yeah.
So it got to the point where, all right, I need to actually start listening to myself think and get some help or I'm not going to make it.
How long did it take you to get clean?
To get clean? Okay. Well, I was addicted to so many things. It's like, which thing?
Yeah.
I have not done meth in a very, very long time. That one wasn't hard to put down as much as all of the addictions can be problematic. They're not all quite as violent as meth.
Right.
But I wouldn't say I'm clean from every single thing. I no longer smoke meth.
Okay. So I want to talk to you about addiction then, because Scott Parks on this program has been very open about his struggles with sobriety. You know, we all have different reasons we are looking for that thing to calm us down, to get to a better place, to feel like you're a better person. Do you believe in addictions that are not substances?
Mm-hmm.
Sex, gambling, I don't know, it could be anything, shopping.
There's a lot of debate in the academic world and
oh, yeah.
People poo-poo. If it's not a chemical, it's not real. That is, I do not agree with that. And talk to anyone whose life has been debilitated by gambling, by sex, by porn, by shopping.
Yeah.
Addiction is addiction. A compulsive pattern of behavior that ruins your life that you keep doing despite knowing better. I think you can be addicted to any process, any pattern, any chemical, any person.
What is the one common thread with anyone struggling with these types of anxiety issues? If it's not extreme addiction, patients come to you, what your clients come to you, what is the one common thing we all have?
The one common thing we have is no one taught us how to drive our brains. We're not given a user's manual when we hit puberty, let alone 20, 25, 30. It's like we're driving this incredibly powerful car and we don't know what we're doing. And then we wonder why we're running into the walls. I don't have to be an auto mechanic to drive a car. You don't need it to be a neuroscientist or spend 20 years in analysis to feel better when you know how your brain works.
Have you mastered your own brain?
Oh, heck no. Absolutely not. I'm still a work in progress.
We'll get to that and the circus straight ahead. And when she said circus, I go, what do you mean? She goes, no, actually the circus. I cannot wait to tell you that story. 913-586-7798. You can text your questions in. Our guest this hour is author Britt Frank. We are back with much more on Dana and Parks straight ahead. Really, every rose has its thorn, Sam? Maybe you have one thorn. Maybe you have 20. I don't know. We probably can't fix all of your things this hour, but I love talking to Britt Frank about all the things. At what age did you know your brain worked differently?
That's such a diplomatic way of saying that. I think I've always known something was not quite working the way it seemed like it was supposed to. Like, I got sent out of the factory short a few pieces of software and an operating manual. Like, always. That's always been a thing.
Even as a child?
Even as a child. No friends, really isolated, very much a loner, didn't know how to do the social thing. I probably would have been diagnosed with any number of things back then. But it was really hard, and I didn't understand why it was so difficult for me. And then I became a teenager, and then puberty hit, and then I had access to substances and other things to be addicted to, and it was game on.
Did you have any family history of any of this in your family?
Not that I knew of, but my family was very much a closed door. We don't talk about it. We don't.
Right.
We just move on. We smile, we sweep it, and we move forward. So
my mom is a not the rock the boater, and I call myself a not the rock the boater. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Even when it's like not fine, like legitimately my house could be on fire and I'd be like, it's okay. Let's all just meet out by the safety tree. You know, it's all right. And so I like the educated part of my brain really does legitimately like kind of follow the lineage of some of why I am the way I am. But you know this, back in the 70s and 80s, we didn't really have services for that. You had services for like extreme cases of disease, disorder, illness, but not just my brain works a little wonky.
My grandmother, the Lores, was carted off by the men in white coats and given electroshock therapy back in the 60s. I don't even know if that's true, but there's a lot of issues in my family, suffice to say.
Well, I don't know if you've ever been to the Glore Psychiatric Museum, and I'm telling all of our listeners this. It's like by St. Joe, right, Sam? You go to that museum one time and look at the timeline in the United States of America as late as we were lobotomizing people, it goes into the 70s. Like, without their consent, it goes. I thought that was like something like in the 1800s. No, 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 no. Right here in good old Kansas City, that museum, your jaw will hit the floor and be like, psychotherapy and analysis and all, we are in the infancy of this stuff.
It's so true. But a lot of those interventions, like lobotomies, assumed that the things that make us human were making us broken. Women were called hysterical.
Yep.
And for having feelings.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, for going through hormonal shifts. Wow. And so as a therapist practicing now, I'm really big on, can we take all the stigma and pathology? Does it all have to be disorder, or can it be humaning is complicated? These are complicated times. And yeah, our brains are going to react extremely to extreme circumstances.
So what age did you figure out then that this is what you wanted to do professionally, and why? Was it because you were searching for someone to help you and couldn't find it?
Both. And it was, I was searching for information that I couldn't find. And then when I found a therapist who specializes in what I now practice, I was horrified that why aren't all therapists trained in this? People don't realize this, but this is a fact. You can become a licensed therapist and never once take a class on the brain. It is not required.
Really?
Really. Having brain training is a specialized, optional, very expensive, time-consuming postgraduate opt-in. It's not required. That's like a physician not having to take anatomy. So, and we wonder, why do we have an epidemic?
Well, and it's also hard fiscally for people to find someone. I remember reading an article, it was about a year and a half ago, that services like you provide and other therapists, and I've had some great ones, it's not cheap. Like, for the average American family, if you really want to get in to talk to somebody, you know, maybe you have a program through work where you get three free, you know, what have you, to make sure that you're like not crazy, whatever that means. But it's out of reach for a lot of people. It shouldn't be.
It is absolutely true, because the time and energy and money it takes to get specialized then prohibit you from taking insurance, because then you wouldn't make enough money to opt in for the training. So it's a problem. And that's why I'm really happy to see social media really talking about trauma, talking about the brain, making this information accessible and not gatekeeping it for only people who can afford it. This information's for everyone.
So your brain works however it works, and your message would be, there is nothing wrong with you. It's just figuring out why you think the way you think, why you act the way you act, and then fix, I don't want to say fixing it. I mean, do you fix it? What was the term you wanted? Can you fix me? You're not here to be fixed, you know?
I really like, can we learn to drive? Can we learn to shift? And it's not that our behaviors aren't problematic and it's not that we're suffering, but what's wrong with me would be replaced by, well, what happened to you? And if the answer is, I don't know, nothing bad happened, then it doesn't really matter what happens. What matters now is what are your choices of those? What are you willing to do? And of that, let's get you up and rolling.
I have had therapists in the past who are fixated with what happened in your childhood. And we've all had things happen in your childhood, like all of it. And I would say, my parents are still married. I've never seen them raise their voices at each other. I had a pretty darn normal childhood. But really, what was it that happened to you? I'm like, then you start wondering, my God, did something happen to me? Am I suppressing some awful, dark, awful thing? I've actually thought that, Britt. Like, is there something that happened to me? I swear to you, there's not. At this point, I'm out with all of it. I would just tell you.
There was a whole push in the 80s about multiple personalities. Suddenly, everyone had it.
Sybil!
Being ritualistically abused. Everyone was repressing it. But what if nothing bad actually happened? What if that were true? And what if humaning is hard and no one taught you how your brain has a gas pedal and a brake pedal? And if you don't know which one is which and how to engage each one, you're going to crash into walls. But you don't actually have to have anything traumatic happen to you to have anxiety, to have big, giant overreactions, or even depression.
So let me ask you this. How much of this do you think is environment, and how much of this do you think is genetic? Is the gun already loaded when we're born? How do you believe that?
So I do think genetics count. They matter. But the research is really encouraging. You can be predisposed genetically to something, but not actually have those switches flipped on. So I know I'm genetically predisposed to heart disease. I don't have heart disease, but I know I should probably watch my intake of red meat, and it's a good thing I quit smoking and limit the alcohol. So if you know you have a predisposition to addiction or something, it doesn't mean you're doomed. It just means, hey, buddy, you should probably be a little bit careful in that area.
Or maybe you go to the casino once or twice a year and you don't like live right next door.
I don't go ever because I know myself too well.
Okay. So I've always joked, I will sit there when those cards are being dealt. I feel the dopamine rush. I feel those happy feelings when the cards are being shuffled and dealt. And then if the dealer is taking too long, I'm like, come on. What is it? Like, I want another dealer. I don't like this dealer. What is that?
I had the same reaction to cocaine and crystal meth. It's that anticipation of reward. And that's what really dopamine is. But you can be addicted to all of these processes, but genetics don't predetermine your fate. With some things, I'm sure they do medically. But psychologically, just because you're genetically bent in this direction doesn't mean you have to end up that way.
It's why we have sibling groups where, you know, like, four of the six siblings extremely successful and two struggle. Like, why you would think they grew up in the same environment, same mom and dad, right?
That's why I don't like the why. I really don't like, why are you like this? Or what happened to you in your childhood? It's okay, given your dilemma, what are your resources? What do you have access to? What's available to you? And what are you willing to say yes to right now?
913-586-7798. You can text your question into our guest this hour is Britt Frank. We will speak with her much more straight ahead. Phones are ringing. Text in your questions. We're not going to do live doc on the air. But text in your questions. We will get to those. You are listening to Dana and Parks. The book is Align Your Mind. You can find it on Amazon or at BrittFrank.com. Britt, two T's, BrittFrank.com. We had a couple of questions from the text line. Sam, generally, what are they asking? We don't want to do specific, like, psychoanalysis. Why did my dad treat me so badly when I was sick? You know, we want just like generalized questions from the text line.
Just some questions about how anxiety manifests in other ways that aren't the more aggressive kind of anxiety attack presentations.
Yes. So if you're not pulling out a gun in traffic, and we hope that you're not, what are some of the just everyday ways that manifests?
So anxiety can be the stuff you think about, like sweaty and heart racing and I need to go to the hospital because I can't see straight, but it could also be perfectionism, people pleasing. It could be this obsessive need to clean your house. Anywhere where you can't stop doing a thing, we'll just call that hidden anxiety.
OCD?
Absolutely. I have that too.
Where everything has to be just right. And one of my, some of them, one to more extent than the other, but one of my children really, like, if she walks in the room and there is anything out of order, to the point that she would come home from college and all of my refrigerator would be reorganized with the labels facing front.
facing front.
Like the milk has to face front. And then my son at one point goes, watch this. This is hilarious. I'm going to go in and like mess with the milk. And then we just watched. He goes, watch. She's going to come in and lose her ever loving mind. She likes order. There's nothing wrong with liking order. But anxiety can manifest that way as well.
When the desire for order turns into the I can't function if the milk cartons aren't all facing the same way,
right.
That's when we have now crossed the barrier from delightfully quirky into anxiety.
Because the world needs that type of brain. I call it the creative brain. Not all people that have that squirrel in the head are creative, but the world needs that, all of the personality types.
All of the brains, all of the personalities, which is why this idea that we should strive for this one authentic self doesn't make any sense. Because which authentic self? The one at 3 p.m. after lunch or the one at 3 a.m. when I'm panicking?
Right.
They're all authentically us. So this idea that we should shoot for authenticity, I think is creating more anxiety.
So you said something earlier that was interesting to me, where instead of telling someone to calm down, that sometimes do we need to be looking to turn things up? You have found some activities in your life that help you, that to me don't seem like a calming thing. What is that about?
Well, no one in the history of anyone calmed down by being told,
right.
Calm down.
You need to calm down.
It's not a thing. It is not. If that worked, it would have. And so the problem is physiologically, when we're trying to calm something down, it's going to scream louder because
It's
needing to be heard. And so instead of taking a deep breath and unrolling my yoga mat at the end of a hard day, I take circus class downtown and I perform on an apparatus high in, above the ceiling, spinning around because I need to turn it up to cycle all that stress energy through my body.
There is something called circus class.
There is.
I didn't even know this was a thing.
Circus Scorpius.
And no way.
It's a thing. Their student company are regular humans. I am not a born and raised gymnast. That is not a thing for me. And you can take circus class. You can hang from things and spin on things.
Yeah.
And real regular people, every accountants and realtors and therapists and nurses. It's so fun.
Can you talk about the revolving door specifically with anxiety and or depression, where you don't feel like doing those things? And then so in not feeling like doing those things, you lay around. And then the laying around makes you not feeling like it just goes around and around mm-hmm. and around and around. Where sometimes for me anyway, I have to force myself to get up. And if I just go play pickleball, get outside, I feel amazing. But why is it so hard to do the circus thing?
Right. Well, we can go into the why is it so hard?
Yes.
But that's a why question.
That's a why question.
That's a why question.
Yeah.
So instead, it's how do we solve for the start? Because everyone, whatever your thing is, understands the once I get going, I'm fine. Once I get to the gym, I can be there.
Yes.
Once I start the email, it's fine. So instead of why can't I start, it's how can I start? And the solve for that, I call them micro yeses.
Yep.
Take the smallest possible step that you can think of, cut it into 15 pieces, make the steps so small you feel ridiculous doing them. That'll get you unstuck faster than anything thing
like
I've ever seen.
Opening the laptop, when I stare at it, I'm like, oh God, I don't want to do this. I've got to do this and I've got to do this. You're saying just start by opening the laptop.
I would say before that, the micro yes is just move the laptop within reach. That's your micro yes. That's it. That's all you got to do. And then you get a micro dose of dopamine and those compound and those pick up momentum. And momentum is a much more powerful change instigator than waiting for motivation.
We talked about this on the program last week where I was joking, not joking, that the thought of just the balled up, wadded up laundry that needed to be folded can seem overwhelming to my brain. And that's so stupid. I raised four children. I went to college. Like, I've got this career. I can do all these things. And then I look at that and I've got to put that fitted sheet on and I just go, yeah, no, I'm out. I can't do it.
I have that with the laundry too. But we can yell at ourselves about it and say it's stupid and why is this so hard? But all of that does is generate cortisol, which is more of the stress hormone that's causing you to be shut down in the first place. And so instead of why is this so hard or what's wrong with me, it's what am I willing to say yes to? Can we break the laundry down into 50 smaller pieces? Because
right.
if you can get one, you can get two, means you can get 10, means you can get it
I
done.
I made it a sock.
Yes,
it a sock,
exactly.
Oh, you just said something that reminded me of something now. I can't remember what it was. It had something to do before the laundry. Any brain can train themselves to the micro yes?
Assuming we don't have dementia or some medical organic
reason.
Yeah, if
you're like a surgeon and you're like operating on my heart, I don't want you to be micro yesing.
Uh-uh. Right. We're assuming that whatever the thing is not life threatening, but you can get I got unstuck from crystal meth, not by solving for my trauma or feeling my feelings. I hadn't eaten in days. I was seeing things. It was a mess. I called someone, told them what was up. And she said, Britt, when was the last time you ate? And I sat there with her on the phone for an hour eating this blueberry yogurt. And that's a micro yes. It's not something you're going to put on social media, but those get you to the next moment, which get you moving.
So I'm glad you brought up diet. We've been talking about this off the air, where I am trying to figure out my glucose level thing. And you say that there are little micro yeses I can even do, or our listeners can even do, where what you put on in your body and when matters.
It's so, and again, these things are so easy. We're all inundated with a to-be-read book stack and all of the things we're supposed to do. And then we wonder why we're frozen and anxious and stuck. How do we make it easier? Well, I recently learned that 30 grams of protein at breakfast keep me from being a hangry monster all day.
Yeah.
It's not fun to do. I don't like eating that much in the morning, but that's not an undoable thing. I don't need the perfect day planner or special shoes or a membership to eat 30 grams of protein. So the information is available, but let's start with, what are you willing to do? Can you do something small in service of the bigger goal? And we do walk around in bodies. Anxiety is not in your mind. It's in your body. It's a physiological reality.
I used to say I am made of cortisol. Is that possible? I joke all the time. It is flowing through me at a rate that I look at other people and I'm like, I wonder what it's like to not have that in your body. I do. I know that I have an additional dose of that when Dana was made. For whatever reason, it's in me. But there are little things you can do to make it better.
Little things. And also, I have it too. High cortisol means high intensity activities that counterbalance it. Doing circus, for me, all I'm focusing on is don't die, don't puke, because it's painful and it's nauseating. So, I mean, it is. It's beautiful. I love it. We'll be performing downtown at Union Station in May.
Well, I can't wait.
But do the things that counterbalance. If you're asking your body to do a huge emotional lift, then we've got to counterbalance that, not with calming down, but with what's going to level it out so you don't feel like you're cortisol dominant all the time.
So let me ask you this. Why is it so hard to give yourself the grace to say no? That's one of the things I'm trying to work on this year. Without no, I'm sorry, and then I'm so sorry, like, are you going to be mad? For me, the ask is the overwhelming part of my brain. Like, when I'm asked to do something, even if it's as simple as, will you meet me for a glass of wine after work? That can seem overwhelming to me.
Absolutely.
Why is it overwhelming? And then how do you give, for everyone listening, the grace to say no?
So a lot of us are taught saying no is unkind or mean or selfish.
Yep.
And so I don't want to say no because I don't want to think of myself as unkind or mean or selfish. So I tell people every no to them is a yes to something. So I'm not saying no to you. I'm saying yes to my mental health today. I'm saying yes to my family today. I'm saying yes to my sanity today. Because once you switch the I'm saying no to I'm saying yes, they're a lot easier to do because you don't feel so bad doing them.
It's not that I don't want to go see you, but I'm saying yes to the circus.
Exactly.
Like, legitimately, I'm going to go spin around like a crazy person and feel better.
Which means when I do say yes to you, I have more of me available. And the people in my life know I don't say yes all of the time, but when I do, I'm not halfway there. I'm there with you because I say yes to myself enough to fill my tank.
Last question, because you're very, very good at this. Acceptance and forgiveness for someone's past, for whatever it is, when you're listening right now in your car, at work, and you beat yourself up over that thing, you got past your addiction. You came out on the other side stronger and brilliant and beautiful and all of those things. How do you get to that point?
So it's important to know forgiveness is not required to heal trauma of other people. So we're talking about self-forgiveness, right? This is about us, me and my brain.
Yep.
Only because it's inefficient to do otherwise. So I go with forgiveness is the most efficient way to get out of the brain's date that got you into the mess in the first place. It's not this soft, toothless, just be nice to yourself thing. Self-compassion and self-forgiveness have real behavioral, physiological implications. It works much better than the alternative.
And it's okay.
And it's okay.
Where do people find you? BritFrank.com?
BritFrank.com.
The book is Align Your Mind. I could speak with you for hours. I know you've got to get out. She's got another appointment. Thank you for being with us on Dana and Parks today. Well, that was fascinating. Absolutely love her.
The brain is the one thing that we know the least about.
You say you start the day every day with a protein shake, Sam, before you even really do anything.
I do. First thing I do, I walk into the kitchen, I throw a scoop and a half of protein into my protein shaker, and I pound it like it's nobody's business.
And then that
levels me out until I get to breakfast, and
All right, good for you.
Protein first thing in the morning is very important.
I got some straight from the chicken eggs on Friday out at Rose Hill Gardens, my happy place. And
straight from the chicken?
Yeah, no, the kind that you leave out on the counter.
Right.
You don't refrigerate them.
Yeah,
you just wash them.
Yeah, because they still have the skin on
amazing.
The outside.
Amazing. Like, it's been a while since I've had an Old Farm Fresh egg.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do eggs in the morning. I'm trying to do protein in the morning.
Super dark yolk?
Adds, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's thicker.
It's richer.
It is richer.
Delicious.
I love it. So listen to this story from the AP. How long does it take you to eat a meal? Do you eat in 20 minutes or less?
Now, we're all trained to eat in 20 minutes or less.
I know
it. That's the old grade school thing, the high school thing. You got to eat that food and get back to class.
Remember at lunch? Most of us got like 22 minutes to eat our lunch, right?
I also never understood the you get 20 minutes to eat your lunch, and then you have to go outside and run for an hour before you can go back to class.
Right. So I want you to ask yourself, does this sound like me? Do you eat a meal in 20 minutes or less? It might be time to slow down. Experts say you can have your cake and eat it too. Just do it slowly. Experts tend to focus on the kinds of foods you can eat to improve your health. But at the speed at which you devour your dinner, it turns out, could matter just as much. There are risks with eating too fast. Think stuck food and the potential to overeat before your brain tells you to stop. How fast is too fast? Here we go. If you're the kind of person who can regularly polish off breakfast, lunch, or dinner in less than 20 to 30 minutes, you are eating too fast.
Really?
It takes about 20 minutes for the stomach to communicate to the brain via a whole host of hormonal signals that it is full. So when people eat rapidly, they miss these signals, and it's very easy to eat beyond that point. Moreover, people who eat quickly are likely to swallow more air, which could lead to bad digestion feelings.
I definitely have that problem.
Not chewing your food properly can also compromise digestion, meaning you don't get all of the nutrients from your food. I think we all do this to some extent. Now, if you're having some five-course, you know, meal with a wine pairing, that's the one time I can remember, like, you slow down. They bring a salad. You slow down. In other countries, they just do this. They just do this in other countries. But in the morning, I'm going to be honest, in the morning, it's usually gluten-free toast with some peanut butter on it, and I'm out the door.
Now, I eat a massive breakfast, and I am guilty of eating it in 10 to 15 minutes. It's usually the last thing I do before I have to get ready to come to work. And so I make my breakfast, I sit down, and I'm on the clock. I have to leave for work at a certain time, so I just pound the food and run out the door.
I've also read this before. Do you sit like in front of a computer, Sam, when you eat, or in front of the TV? Like, it's one of the things that Dr. Teig will ask you, like, where do you eat? Are you eating in your car? You know,
I am a huge kitchen table guy.
You're a kitchen. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I will eat breakfast and dinner at the kitchen table. Sometimes dinner at the coffee table if we're watching like a movie or a show, or like last night we were watching the new episode of 1923. Oh, by the way, that one's gruesome. But I used to be a prolific couch eater.
Oh, yeah.
When I lived in the apartment by myself and, you know, throw some sports up on the TV, kick my feet up, and like you can literally see the cartoon. I've got the big bowl of food sitting on my stomach as I am leaned back eating, but I cannot do that anymore. I have to eat at the table.
I just think if you look 20 to 30 minutes, what percentage of Americans do you think, for the most part, finish breakfast, lunch, and or dinner under 30 minutes, it's going to be an enormous number.
Almost all. And again,
almost
because that's
all.
How we were trained to eat lunch for whatever, the first 18 years of our lives. Now, I pushed back on that in high school a lot because of how much I was eating, because I was running track and I was burning a lot of calories, so I needed to take in a lot of calories.
Yeah.
And I would just eat in class and deal with the fact that I was constantly getting in trouble for it.
All right. And then we'll end with this. Wellness rooms are starting to claim space in many homes. Also from the Associated Press, our homes have been multitasking for a while now. They may be where we work. They certainly are where we play. And often they are the place where we feel most at peace. Spurred by the pandemic, dens became offices. Extra bedrooms became workout zones. Dining rooms morphed into creative spaces. That's what we did with our dining room, by the way. That became an office and a creative space during the pandemic. But people are now making room for wellness. And that can mean a whole host of things. It can mean a Zen garden. It can mean that you bump out your bathroom for a larger bathtub on the primary bathroom.
No, I can't do bathtubs.
It could be a low-tech sound bathing studio with comfy pillows, yoga mats, essential oils. It could be anything where you find peace in that space. Like maybe you don't live next to a creek, but you want to put the little babbling water feature out back.
I know of at least three people who have Zen rooms in their home.
Are you serious?
They paint the walls a very rich color, whether it's a warm color like a red or an orange, or a cool color like a dark navy blue. It's always a very rich version of that color.
Is this a Gen X thing or a Gen Z thing then? Like,
I think it's just the people that I know.
Okay.
You're into the Zen thing, and, you know, my girlfriend's into yoga, and she's a yoga instructor, so we happen to have friends who also fall into that same category.
Sure.
And, yeah, they'll have the little rock garden over on the table and the little fountain to just add that water flowing sound to the room, and they also use it as their office, so they're Zen all day long.
I often wonder if you are a yoga instructor or if you work in that space. Like, that is your work. Let's say you have people who come into your home, and that's where you practice. So how do you, I'm curious how they separate, like for us after work, Sam, I don't want to listen to the radio. I don't want to talk about the day's events. Please God, do not come up to me at dinner and ask me, what did you think about the stock market? Like, right. I just don't want, after work, I don't want to talk about that stuff anymore, right? Like, how are your kids kind of thing? I don't know how anyone that works in that space, especially out of their house with yoga or Pilates, how you separate that to become your happy place if that's also your workspace.
I'm about to sound very crunchy, but it's all about feng shui and the energy that you put into the room.
I don't even know you anymore.
Yeah, I know.
I don't even know you anymore.
I am. It's bad.
913
Living healthy.
867-798. I'm proud of you. Scott is back tomorrow. You are listening to Dana and Parks. We have much more straight ahead. Stick with us.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.